Blog Talk Radio.
And here we go.
All right, welcome to That Nerd Show. It's Wednesday, the middle of the week, and we are here. Or I should say, I am here for the time being until we get everybody on. So you're just going to have to contend with me, Marcus Blake, one of the hosts of That Nerd Show. But I think our fans can put up with that. At least I hope you guys can. Before we get to the main part of our show, what you should be streaming, we do want to go through some news and talk about some things that are happening in the nerd universe. So I am going to kick off our roundup as I get everybody to call in and get this show set up. And we're going to hit with the top of the news hour. As we like to call it, probably the biggest news item that has hit in the last couple of hours. CBS released the first look at Supergirl, the Supergirl series on CBS, which coincidentally will actually be on Monday nights at 7 p.m., facing off against Gotham. So they're going to do a little bit of a battle there. But anyway, they released a 6.5-minute trailer of the Supergirl TV show. And keep in mind, everybody, this is just a first look of what to expect for Supergirl. My personal opinion, I can't get excited yet, even though I do like the concept of having a Supergirl TV show. Right now, and this is probably going to sound too much like a guy, maybe a little misogynistic, but it just looks too much like a girly girl show where you're not going to really have any dark or gritty characters. My biggest fear, and I was commenting on this on our social media pages today, is that there's going to be too much of the worst episodes of Smallville in this series. What I like to call the Dawson's Creek bullshit. We're in high school and this is going to be like Vampire Diaries and we're not going to take ourselves too seriously. And I really hope that's not the case with this series because, you know, Kara Jor-El, she is a very interesting character. Kind of balances out Superman a little bit that, you know, he's not the last surviving person of Krypton. Plus, from the looks of this first look, they are going to talk about Superman a little bit and, you know, give him quite a few nods. But just my personal opinion, everybody out there, that I can't truly get excited about this yet. I personally like the more darker characters. I've enjoyed what the CW has done. But, I also think that CBS is trying to appeal to a younger fan base to bring in more girls that may not necessarily be considered nerds, but there are plenty of girls in the nerd universe. So you can take a look at this trailer on our website, thatnerdshow.com. Of course, you can check it out at facebook.com/thatnerdshow because we did post it, and I'm sure it's been posted all over Facebook to see what we can expect. But it's quite a bit of a different take, and of course, a different take on the Supergirl uniform. Definitely a big departure than the last time that we saw Supergirl, which was in the Smallville series. So, excuse me, folks, we'll see what happens with that, but they will be debuting this fall on CBS at the same time as Gotham. And one thing I can tell you for me personally, I will probably watch Supergirl before I watch Gotham. And you've heard us argue many, many times about why we don't like Gotham on this show and why we haven't really covered anything. So, getting back to the CW, there is kind of a fan campaign going on right about now in regards to Constantine, which got the official axe by NBC this week and did not get renewed. That they want the CW to take over. And there had already been talks about crossing over in the Flash and the Arrow universe. And I know that there was negotiations going on with Steve Amorell from Arrow to be on the Constantine show. So any petition that's out there to get the CW to take over, I think that's a great thing. I think Nerds should definitely sign on to that. We'll be keeping a watchful eye. And hopefully we'll get to see more of Constantine, because it was not a bad show at all. They did a pretty good job with it for what it was. I mean, for the character. I mean, they were very, very true to the look. I mean, to the comic book look of Constantine. Definitely got away from the Keanu Reeves look from the movie. Anyway, we will keep up to date with that. So, okay. Give me just a second, folks, and we'll get back to more news items. Okay, going down some more news that's happened. A little bit of an update on Teen Titans that's supposed to be premiering on TNT, I guess, this fall. DC properties have already, you know, been completely set up on the CW, but TNT is now getting into the game with Teen Titans, and they are working to remain very, very true to the source material itself. The news article via Comic Book Resources states this. Akiva Goldman and Mark Hems, who are attached to pen the pilot. The pilot is developed with TNT. Akiva's been very busy doing some other things. When asked about the status of Titans, adding to the hope that the cast, the project will begin production maybe this summer, that falls in line with the DC CCO. Riley continued addressing the fact that there has already been so many superhero shows on television, specifically based on DC characters, and he ultimately agreed that the TV landscape now is well serviced on the superhero front. TNT had also stated that its goal was to be very true to the source material, which Riley stated was a groundbreaking property when it first started. There were consequences to things that happened. It wasn't somebody died and they moved on. This was the first superhero to be an addict, referencing to Green Arrow's former partner Speedy. It's a coming of age story for Robin, who feels like Batman betrayed him. They're going to end up being very, very interesting. And I think in a lot of ways it's going to be excellent, according to sources. So, anyway, I'm going to bring up... I'm going to bring up Brendan, who's running just a little bit late. Those damn GameStop people.
Sorry about that, folks.
Yeah, so, I don't know if all our fans want to... I don't know if our fans completely want to hear me do everything. Walter Cronkite, I am not. But that's okay. Going down with our news rundown a little bit, we were just commenting on the fact that it looks like they're trying to be very, very true to Teen Titans on TNT.
Yes.
Very true to the source material and everything, and take very good care of it. That's according to the writers and the producers, which made that comment today in an article. So I don't know about you, Brendan, but I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a great thing. I've been very excited about Titans from the moment I heard Jeff Johns tweet about it back in December. As many of our listeners know, I'm a huge Nightwing fanboy. I love the fact that for once a character grew up in comics or some type of medium like that. I mean, just to give an example of what I'm talking about, The Simpsons just got renewed for their 27th and 28th seasons, and Bart Simpson's still in the fourth grade. So, you know, I really enjoy that they grew up the original Robin. They made Unison older and actually gave him a coming of age arc and becoming his own man. So I really enjoyed that. And seeing the mantle of Robin pass to, you know, several other people now, Tim Drake, Jason Todd, and now of course, Bruce Wayne's kid, but, who's dead, but you know, hey, we know all know comic book deaths. I'm sure he'll be back in 3 weeks if he's not already. So
very true.
Yeah. I really like that. I really like that they're going for, you know, being close to the source material. I like a lot of the cast choice, you know, Hawk Girl. So there's a lot of good things going on with that show. The nice thing, too, is TNT is that we do have a real opportunity here for a big shared universe because the CW is jointly owned by CBS Corp and Warner Brothers. Well, Warner Brothers owns TNT, and CBS Corp obviously owns CBS, where Supergirl is going to be on. So all of these shows, because they're on, you know, jointly owned networks, can all exist in the same universe. And with Legends of Tomorrow coming on, which is the new Arrow Flash spinoff, plus there's a big push for CW to pick up Constantine. So by the way, tweet at CW TV, you know, hashtag Constantine, and tell them that they should pick it up. So you can have all of these, you know, together. It's going to be amazing.
Yes, definitely, and I forgot to mention who to tweet earlier when we were talking about Constantine. So I think it goes without saying, and we've said it many times on this show, that TV is a great place for DC Comics in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And you get to get, you know, it doesn't mean that DC is any less than Marvel. You know, Marvel has done a fantastic job, you know, in the cinematic universe, okay?
And they're getting better on CG.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
But DC has, I think in a lot of ways, has so many more rich characters. In my personal opinion, I am more of a DC fan. To have stories that evolve more than just a two-hour movie, okay, and to be able to connect all of these characters together through different TV shows, stick with it. Because if it really doesn't work out...
Last night when Green Arrow, The Flash, and Firestorm were all on at the same time fighting the Reverse Flash, I might have nerdgasmed a little bit.
Hey, I might have had a little nerdgasm when, you know, The Flash returned the favor by breaking them out of, you know, the little dungeon.
I haven't seen it. I was at GameStop.
Earmuffs, earmuffs. Anyway, you can go back and watch that episode a little bit. But
yes, I will.
Yeah, we'll be very careful not to give too many spoilers to you, but the season finale of Arrow was pretty good, and another shining example of why DC is great on TV. Getting back to Supergirl, since we are talking about it, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the news of dropping, you know, the trailer and everything, and I wanted to ask Brendan if he had a chance to watch it and what he might have thought, or are you even excited about the Supergirl TV series?
I put it this way. I'm trying to be very open-minded about it. I've never been a huge fan of the Supergirl character because I've never been a huge fan of the Superman character. Going in there wasn't like, oh my God, it's Supergirl, yay. But you know, it does have the chance of being in that same shared universe, like I said. It is the same showrunners, I believe. So they haven't steered me wrong yet. So I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to watch it. I'm not as excited as I am about, you know, possibly Constantine being saved or Legends of Tomorrow or Titans. But I am still willing to give it a chance.
Right. No, and I think that's a very honest way of looking at it. As I mentioned earlier to our fans, I am too worried that it's going to fall into the trap that Smallville did, and you're going to have so much of this Dawson's Creek high school type bullshit, and you're not going to have any darkness to the character.
I think you have a bigger problem with that on CW than you do on CBS. CBS is a much older target audience. So I don't think you're going to see that. You got to remember.
I don't want a girly girl show either. I understand that we're talking about Supergirl, but at the same time, you know, I don't want this to center around, you know, a woman who, well, never mind. I won't go off on that little tangent, but as
I don't think you're going to, because it's just, I don't think that's CBS's target audience, and they're very smart about playing to their audience. They know who their audience is. Their audience is people over the age of 30. So they're not going to stray too far from that path. I mean, they're the only show that they get that regularly gets people under the age of 30 is, you know, Person of Interest. So I don't know, I think you're going to see a different take on it than the girly girl or the high school drama.
I think the show is also geared more towards finding young girls, you know, teenagers and stuff like that. To watch more on CBS, and I'm not saying that's not a bad thing. Absolutely, we need to have strong female characters, and DC's got
but
a lot of them.
Strong, not
right. And I'll put it to you this way: I loved Tom Welling as Clark Kent / Superman, but Smallville, except for some really great episodes in the beginning, really didn't hit its full stride and be good until he was out of high school, you know, until he got past and that he wasn't a teenager, okay? I would say about season 4, about the time he was graduating and then all that, is when it really, really got good. So, you know, I don't want to deal – here's my thing. If you're going to make Supergirl like girls – where they're trying to find their way, yada, 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 like on HBO, which is fine, okay? But if that's what your show is going to be all about, but, hey, I'm a superhero and stuff, then I'm, as a guy, I'm not interested. You're not hitting me as an audience, okay? But if you are trying to...
I can see it as a minor subplot, but it shouldn't be the whole focus of the show.
Well... I can't think of the show now with America Ferrera. Ugly Betty.
Mm-hmm.
that was the show. The first time when I first watched the thing, I was like, "Oh, I feel like I'm watching like if Ugly Betty was a superhero," and I'm totally not that audience. But if you're trying to reach those girls and make them superhero fans, that's great, fantastic. But, you know, I'll stick with what I like out of character. And I think that's the way it is with all superhero shows. I mean, some people like Arrow more than they like Flash, vice versa. Some people didn't really care for Constantine. It wasn't their bag. And just like you and me, I like Superman more than I like Batman. But I absolutely love Batman. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's just my big worry. However, as I mentioned earlier, if it's going to be on at the same time as Gotham, I'm definitely watching Supergirl before I watch Gotham, because I still just don't care about Gotham.
Honestly, I tried to go back and watch Gotham towards the end, and I watched the Milo Ventimiglia arc as the Ogre because I really liked him in Heroes as Peter. But honestly, other than him, there is no reason to stay with the show. So when his arc was over, I stopped watching again. And I'm happy that Miranda Baccarin has all this work, because she's, you know, on Gotham. She's the voice of Gideon on The Flash. She's also going to be in the Deadpool movie. So I'm really happy for her. But honestly, I will probably wait until mid-season next year of Gotham to see, A, if it gets canceled, because I don't know if it'll make it past mid-season, and B, if everybody else says, oh, my God, it's gotten so much better this season, then I might go back and, you know, and Hulu and watch the whole, you know, binge-watch the whole season. But I have no reason. I haven't brought myself to watch the season finale. I've got no reason to watch season 2 of Gotham until they give me one.
I think IGN probably, in their review, summed it up after the first full season. They tried to do too much and put too much in there.
Oh, way too much.
They should have focused on Gordon didn't really get to the. Yeah, and didn't get to the heart of what Gotham really is all about. It's always going to be a Batman story. It's great to have an origin story of how the criminals came to be. You don't need 22 episodes of that, nor would Jim Gordon's backstory. They're all minor characters. But unfortunately, we still we're dealing with the fact that we don't want another reboot or origin story of Batman. And that's one of the reasons that I think Batman in Justice League will work and Ben Affleck can actually be okay, because it's not another origin story. He is seasoned.
Yeah, exactly.
He's older. Yeah. So
I mean, he's our fifth Batman in the last 25, 30 years. So
right.
we know Batman's origin story. That's just why I'm thrilled with Marvel that they're not doing another origin story with Spider-Man. They're just going right into Civil War, and that he's already a Spider-Man, and everybody knows who Spider-Man is. So if you do,
right.
if you haven't seen his origin story already, too effing bad.
Well, I'm sorry if you. I think everybody pretty much knows his origin story at this point.
My dad is 70 years old, never read a comic book in his life. He knows Spider-Man's origin story. If you don't know Spider-Man's origin story, you're either dead before he was created or not yet born. I'm sorry.
All right, so to finish out the news rundown, real quick, a couple of items here. For all you comic book fans out there, yet again, we have changed Aquaman's uniform, which this is actually a good thing, because, you know, the original uniform that we still remember Aquaman in really sucks. And so
green
anything
and orange is not becoming on anyone.
No, not at all. So I think if...
Unless you're a pumpkin. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I didn't hate the photos of Jason Momoa as Aquaman. He actually, even though he does look like Khal Drogo as Aquaman, but I'm okay with that. Jason Momoa, Aquaman. This is what happened post my Baywatch days. Anyway. Most of what's going on in TV, and we'll be talking more about that next week, is season finales, kind of wrapping up some stuff. And we will be talking a little bit more about the shows that have gotten the axe and what's going to happen. but I do want to point out one thing. For you fans of Forever, it did not get renewed, but we have a great review about it, the full season by Allison Costa, which you can read on our website, and how we actually rate the full season. So you should definitely go and check that out. And I'm going to segue into gaming news, and Brendan can finish this up, but probably the biggest thing of gaming news that got announced today was you will be able to fly the Millennium Falcon in Battlefront. So I'm excited about that.
That had already been implied. But of course, yesterday, the next Assassin's Creed game was announced. It's called Assassin's Creed Victory. It's going to be set in Victorian London, which seems to be a theme with video games lately. Although, what I like about this one is it's Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Victory was the code name. Basically, what this game is doing is kind of, it's acknowledging the mistakes of Assassin's Creed Unity. Actually, Ubisoft came out and very blatantly said, yeah, we took too many risks with Unity, and it didn't turn out. You know, the whole was not greater than the sum of its parts. So we went back to our roots, and the tone of it seems to be much more like Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is a favorite of many people, because Edward Kenway, the hero, the assassin in that, was very much kind of the wise ass, and it was very fun-loving. And this guy, Jacob, who I can recognize the voice actor's voice, I just wish I could figure out his name. He's a pretty good British actor, and he just kind of has that kind of fun-loving attitude to him as well. So I think Jacob's going to be a lot of fun as a character. They've also decided to not do multiplayer in this game and go strictly for the best single-player experience they can have, which I think is a good move, because Assassin's Creed at its heart has always been a single-player game, and they tried to add multiplayer because multiplayer is the big thing. And in some cases, it was fun, but it really never took off. So I think focusing on what they do best is a smart idea, and they're also, as big as Paris was in Unity, London is actually going to be 30% larger than Paris. And what they are doing the basis of the game is in order to fight all the Templars, who are the robber barons of the Industrial Revolution in London, you're going to organize the mobs. So it's kind of like Assassin's Creed meets Gangs of New York. So you're going to organize all the gangs to help you take the city. And so it's a very interesting game concept, and I'm looking forward to see more of that at E3. Also, what's been announced is if you like top-down RPGs, the old party-style RPGs like Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, Icewind Dale, Planescape Torment, we've recently had a revival of these games. Two of them on Kickstarter, one by Obsidian called Pillars of Eternity, is on Steam now. You can buy it for $40, and it got a 9.0 from IGN. They were thoroughly impressed with it. Another one is called – are you still there, Marcus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just a little crackling.
Okay.
Skynet hasn't cut me off yet.
All right, good. The other one is from In Exile Entertainment, which is called it's the sequel to Planescape Torment. It's called Planescape Tides of Numenera. That one comes out later this year. And then the last one is the granddaddy of them all. We go back to Dungeons & Dragons for Legends of the Sword Coast, which is going to be using the D&D 5th Edition rule set, and it has two play modes. One play mode is your traditional one-player build your party, play the computer story. The other mode is you can go online and you can play as one character in the party with four or five other people in the party, and then there is a DM who is setting the dungeons up for you in real time. So they can either do a preset dungeon and then just add traps and bad guys, and they can actually dial up or down the level of the difficulty of the bad guys in real time in order to balance the fight. Or they can actually build their own dungeons. So there's a lot more coming on that game in the months to come, too. So those are kind of a couple of the big stories. And then the biggest story of them all right now is that Battlefield 4, or not Battlefield, excuse me, Fallout 4 from Bethesda will be announced at E3. This year, instead of just the big three conferences of Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, plus EA and Ubisoft conference, for the first time ever, Square Enix and Bethesda will be having conferences as well, and expect the keynote of the Bethesda presentation to be Fallout 4, which people have been waiting for a long time. And the rumored location is Boston. So I think it'd be pretty cool to walk through post-apocalyptic Fenway Park, but we'll see how that goes. So that's pretty much gaming news for right now. I'm sure there's more I could throw out there, but that's enough. We can save some for next week.
Well, they did announce that the official announcement that Call of Duty Black Ops 3 is coming out in November. We'll talk a little bit more about that because we're going to be doing a Call of Duty show next month titled, I forgot the exact title, but it's basically, are there too many Call of Duty games? Is there anything good that we can make anymore?
You know, and that's a question that can be applied to a lot of franchises, too. EA Sports franchises, the Battlefield right alongside of Call of Duty, and the Assassin's Creed one, because all of those have a new game every year.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that with Assassin's Creed when the new one comes out, but I think it's kind of interesting as we gear up for some more of these games. I'm not saying that there aren't great stories that you can do. As a Call of Duty fan personally, I enjoy many of the games. But then again, you have to eventually say when is enough is enough. I mean, this is getting kind of old. But anyway, all right, moving right along. And I apologize to the fans, still getting over a cold. So with a new category on our show called What You Should Be Streaming, we'd like to suggest, as we've talked about in the recent weeks, hidden gems, things you have forgotten about, that you can find on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. Since TV is going the way of binge-watching and streaming now, we thought it would be kind of fun to do an entire show about it and talk about some of our favorites that you might not have, that you might not realize is out there. And it also gives me a chance to, excuse me, to kind of segue into doing a review over one of my favorite shows. I know Brendan's not a fan, but since now the entire seven seasons of Sons of Anarchy are on Netflix and you can watch it from beginning to end, to kind of do a final wrap-up and then talk about that for, you know, our Sons of Anarchy fans out there, many of whom are not bikers at all, but just love good drama. But before I get to that, as I said, there are a lot of things that you may not realize that are out there, and we'd like to talk about some of these, you know, hidden gems. And we're going to continue to do that every once in a while, as well as write blogs. So, because I actually pulled out one the other day, which I, with Alan Rickman and a great British cast that I'll talk about here later in the show. But if you've got pens and pencils and notepads and you actually still write on actual paper, take some notes, because we've got some good suggestions for you about things you should check out. But before we do that, my first thing is going to be Sons of Anarchy, and I'm going to tell you why I think everybody should start this from beginning to end. You don't have to be a biker to enjoy this show, okay? Not only does it have a great cast, and I think it's probably the best role that Katie Sagal ever had as the mother and matriarch of the characters, this is also a very Shakespearean show told within a, you know, a biker universe and criminals and ATF and gangs and all that. So it's a very violent world. I got hooked onto this show many years ago when I had a rock and roll station gig where I basically had to pretend to be a biker because it was a biker radio station. Although the music was fantastic, it was all rock and roll. You know, I'm not a biker and can't really pull off that look. But we would do promo nights at Reno's down in Deep Ellum, and always tend to do it on nights that Sons of Anarchy was on TV. And it was, I did this gig about the time of the first, you know, during the first season, and just, you know, got interested in the show that way. But what I can say about this is, again, you're dealing with a biker gang that basically runs drugs and guns and all that, and then the main character, Jax, is trying to balance life between being a criminal and a family man and raising his sons, and also getting to, because the beginning of the show actually starts out with him finding a journal written by his father about his vision for the club, but it's his stepfather that's sitting at the head of the table and the president while he's the vice president, and you know, the guy ended up marrying his mother, who, you know, runs the front business between all of their illegal deals. And, you know, you get to the show and start... Do what?
So the main character is Hamlet.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, it's very much a Hamlet theme, and also Macbeth.
Yeah.
So, you know, throughout the entire series, you're like, just like we talked about with Steven tonight, you know, where you have sympathy for the bad guys, I don't want anybody to misunderstand that these people are bad people, okay? They really are. They're violent, they're murderers, they're, you know, but they have a code and, you know, they take care of their family, but at the same time, the son is wrestling with the fact and started to figure out that maybe his mom and stepdad kind of murdered his dad because dad wanted peace and didn't want to be in a legal biker club and all that. And it's his ascension to the top and trying to wrestle with that as being a family man. And I think the biggest thing about the show is, you know, you get through it seems like every episode and especially every season, you're just like, how do these people come out alive? In a perfect world, there's no way these people should not be in jail or dead or whatever. And, you know, you get these very rich characters, like Jimmy Smith joins the show in the last two seasons as the lover of Katie Sagal's character after she basically betrays her husband and sets him up to go to prison and and everything. And for Jax, the main character, it's what do I have to do to save myself, but also, you know, relinquish or tell the truth about what really happened with my father and about these people, and also save my club and try to make it pure. And while I won't give away the last episode, and yes, it's very much Hamlet. So if you've read your Shakespeare, you pretty much probably already have figured out what's going to happen. But it's extremely, extremely gritty. And just for FX, even for FX, which has a lot of gritty things, there were some scenes in there that I was like, wow, I didn't really need to see a two-minute rape in prison in this show, but thank you for that. However, Marilyn Manson playing a gang leader in prison with no makeup on and a lot of tattoos, he was really good. So that's one of my recommendations of what you should be streaming. And you can totally binge watch Sons of Anarchy. Ron Perlman is fantastic throughout the entire series, but you're also rooting for him to die. And as much as you think Katie Sagal's character probably you're like, you don't want her to die because she's such a great character and a tough bitch. You know that she has to by the end of the season because of all the scheming and everything that she does. She can't, in a just world, she can't make it out alive. There's just no possible way that she can. And I kept saying that for 7 years. And it's funny because our buddy Steve, who works at our local pub, every week while I was on, did you see this week? Oh my God, how come these people are still alive? So that's what I can recommend is something that people should binge watch on Netflix. And over to you, Brendan. What's your first pick?
My first pick is actually for those folks that are Station Network. If you have a PlayStation Plus membership, then you get to watch this for free. If you do not, but you own a PlayStation 3 or a PlayStation 4, then you can pay, I think, $2.99 per episode. It's called Powers. Powers is an adaptation of a Marvel comic of the same name written by Brian Michael Bendis, who's a very famous comic. Centers around a superhero who has lost his powers, and he is now a detective in the LA department's powers division. Basically, they are monitor superheroes, and when there is a superhero or supervillain involved crime, they are called into it. The lead character is played by Charlton Copley, District 9 and the A-Team. He does a really good job conveying somebody that's so conflicting, so much of what made him who he was. And the main villain in the story is a character named Wolf, who's kind of like he was an older guy with powers who was kind of a mentor to all the other younger powers people when Charlton Copley's character, Chris, jumping into his powers, and he was kind of like a philosopher. this philosopher backer who then went crazy. The character is one part Lex Luthor and one part Hannibal Lecter. And Eddie Izzard does a phenomenal job with it. And also Michelle Forbes, who's been in a lot of things over the years. Sci-fi fans will remember her as Ensign Wren from Star Trek The Next Generation, among some other projects. She plays one of the more powerful superheroes named Retro Girls, and she does a very good job as well. And it tackles a lot of issues that really don't get brought up in traditional comic books. Like, let's just say, for example, superheroes were real. Well, they spend all their time beating up supervillains and training. So how do they earn money? Because it's not like they actually have time to acquire skills to do a job, and they're not all Bruce Wayne. So how do they earn money? And a lot of them in this world turn to endorsements. So basically Under Armour and Pepsi, and all, they're like the big sports or Hollywood celebrity. And you get agents involved, and they – end up turning some of these things into staged fights for the benefit of boosting one power or villain or another. It becomes a little bit of a fraud in certain instances, and things can go wrong when that happens, and innocent people get you know, I really attack some of these. Some of the crazier things that happen in comics, they spend and say, okay, this takes it and throws it into the modern world and says, no, it's not okay, and how do people deal with it? So it was a real different take on comics, and I really enjoyed it. Some of the acting outside of Charlotte Copley and Eddie Izzard was a little wooden, but I thought the writing was really well done. The effects were kind of cheesy, but it's a low, you know, it had a lot of budget, but it wasn't as big budget as some of the comic productions out there. But I think the fact that it was picked up for season two and it was a success for Sony, I think you'll see a little bit more money pumped into it for season two. So really, really good show. If you got access to the PlayStation Network, go ahead and watch it.
I told everybody we would do a quick review on it. I have not had a chance to stream this show yet, but not only are we rating it as a very good show, but we've heard a lot of great things about this. Because it seems like everybody that has some kind of streaming feature is getting into original programming. Mm-hmm. Netflix was really the big one to do this, and they have just turned out some great, great show, original series. Daredevil being one of them. But mm-hmm. it's kind of the future of TV now. So
much so, even NBC is doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's how we are in nature now when it comes to TV. You know, like, we don't have time to probably even sit for an hour or to really enjoy things, but we love to binge watch on the weekends when we do have time. So sometimes with us on this show, I mean, we have to like binge watch while we're working to be able to review things and tell you, to give you our suggestions. While I could pull out some different TV series, you can catch all the Star Trek series on Netflix. And going back and watching Star Trek is always a good thing, no matter what your favorite series is. I will admit that I was a little bored today while I was doing web work and not having to deal with customers, so I did actually start Voyager again, because I haven't always been a huge fan of Voyager, and I'm like, maybe I should go back and watch it, because I loved the concept, and I think Kate Mulgrew is a wonderful actress and was a great captain. So it's like, this is my way of kind of going back and starting it again. But I'm not going to talk about
Voyager. It is the 20th anniversary, too.
It is the 20th anniversary. Damn it, we're old. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I felt old last year when I officially had my driver's license for 20 years, but okay. Anyway, I'm going to pull out a hidden gem in a movie that I don't know if people even realize exists. And I didn't. I think I saw this movie like 10 years ago on cable, but had forgotten about it. It's a movie called Blow Drive with, and no, guys, get your head out of the gutter. It's not what you think. But it absolutely has this very wonderful British cast starring Alan Rickman, Natasha Richardson, Bill Nye, Rachel Griffith, just a cast of other characters that you'll realize. Not also some American characters. Rachel Lee Cook and Josh Hartnett are in it as well. But it's about a hairdressing competition that comes to a town in England, and Josh Hartnett's character and Alan Rickman's character are father and son and run this, you know, little haircut place. And Bill Nye is coming back to repeat as champion for this competition. So it's outrageous, and can we just all agree that whatever Bill Nye does is awesome? I mean, am I wrong about that? I'm not wrong, am I?
I mean, for the most, okay. I don't think I've actually seen anything where I've gone, wow, that sucked with him in it. So,
yeah. Well, anyway, just the seriousness of this, you know, hair competition. And the backstory is Alan Rickman's former model, Rachel Griffith, ran off with his wife. And they run a little salon place. And, of course, Natasha Richardson, who plays the former wife, is dying of cancer. So it's kind of father-son, mother, lesbian lover, and all of them getting back together to kind of try to win this competition against people. And Heidi Klum has a really funny role in it as well. That's not playing herself in TV series, but playing like a hair model with these two warring brothers who she's sleeping with. And it's got the typical British humor, kind of over the top on certain things, but very dry and witty. And, mm-hmm. you know, Alan Rickman and Bill Nye are basically nemesis when it comes to styling hair. And I don't think it's something that you would really expect. Again, I saw this movie about 10 years ago. I'd forgotten about it, and it was surfing Netflix a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch that. And it was funny as hell. I could not stop laughing. And besides, Alan Rickman, again, does he do anything bad? No, not really. So,
nope.
So, yes, I know people are probably wondering why I would suggest a movie called Blow Dry or the British title Never Better. But, yeah, it's just one of those out-there movies that you should definitely check out because, like I said, it's got a great British cast. So there you go. What about you, Brendan?
I'm going to bring up something that we haven't actually I haven't even seen yet, though, just because I mentioned it in passing earlier about how, you know, we are taking this new approach towards television online and with the consumption of the entire series at one shot. And doing that, they're going to release a show coming up here at the end of May called Aquarius, and it's with David Duchovny, and he stars as the detective who chases down Charlie Manson. And they are going to release it, you know, traditionally on, you know, one week at a time over the summer, but the day after the pilot airs, they are going to release the entire series online for you to watch in one shot if you want to. And it's really good that they're adapting and recognizing of an old generation who still watches TV this way, but they're a generation who's watching a TV in a new way, and we need to adapt to keep those viewers. So I'm very excited because obviously I love David Duchovny. I love period pieces. I love mysteries. So, and of course, just the whole Charlie Manson thing is one of those that has stirred the imaginations of people for decades. So I think it's the right story. One thing Stephen DeKnight said in an interview on IGN, which is why I think everybody's really loving this this format of putting the whole series out and letting people binge consume it, is that showrunners don't have to wait 4 months or 5 months to find out if their show is being well received, and they don't have to have their guts ripped other week if they have one off episode, you know, from
right.
Twitter feedback. They 13-hour or 10-hour movie, how many episodes it is, and it's people absorb it all in a weekend, and then they hit Twitter and it's either yay or nay, it's either it's good or and then immediately, okay, we've got our hands, let's green light season two. I think it's a win-win scenario both for people who to see everything and want to know the story, and also works because they get a much larger head start on knowing what's good and what's not. So I think we're going to see more. I think NBC is just the first of many network programs to do this, especially if Aquarius takes off for NBC. I think you'll see a lot of other networks copy them.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I mean, it's, again, you know, it's, I get trying to make people wait like week to week, but, you know, when it comes to cliffhangers, we don't want to wait, you know, and if you have like an off episode, but there's information within that episode that pertains to the entire like season, then you want to, you know, you'll get through that, but you want to go on and you don't want to have to wait a week. Just because you have a bad episode here and there doesn't mean that the season overall is bad. So there, you know, every show has bad episodes. Episodes that are kind of like, you're really not that excited about. But then again, the arc of the story within that season is, you know, fantastic. I will give you an example, because this is kind of my next pick, and it is still on Netflix. excuse us. You've heard me and Brendan talk about this show over the years. A show called Life with Damian Lewis and Sarah Cherie, who plays Shaw in Person of Interest. This was a show that came out like literally the season of the right before the writer's strike back in 2007-08. And, you know, you only got like 11 episodes its first season. It was very highly touted by NBC at the time, and you didn't know if it was going to survive. And it was the premise is a former cop who gets set up for murder spends 12 years at Pelican Bay Prison before he's exonerated. And as part of being exonerated, he gets his badge back, gets to be a detective, and gets $50 million from the city of L.A. And so now he's rich, and everybody's like, why are you wanting to come back to be a cop? Well, because I've always been a cop, as he tries to explain to people. And he's also trying to solve who set him up. Well, at the same time, he learned the power of Zen in prison. So there's a lot of offbeat quotes, you know, talking about Zen and stuff like that. You know, especially in the first episode when they have to go visit a prison, and the guards are like, you know, we know you're one step away from coming back. We have a room ready for you. And he's like, anger steals my joy. Like, are you trying to make fun of us? It's the universe that laughs at us all. You know, deflects these arguments from people that are trying to get him riled up. Well, it actually got a second season, so you have a total of about 30 episodes. And even though it didn't get renewed past the second season, it does kind of tie everything up when he finally finds, you know, who did it. Like in the first season, he does find the man who actually killed these friends of his whose murder he was set up for. But, you know, not every episode was really great, but the overall story was great. You know, they had some episodes in season two that kind of dragged a little bit. but they were funny overall.
And William Atherton was great in that show, especially in season two. He always plays such a good slime ball. I mean, going back to, you know, Die Hard getting his teeth knocked out by Bruce Willis's wife in the movie, you know, John McClane's wife. So it did suffer from Donald Logue syndrome, though. Donald Logue he's kind of like the male Summer Glau, not in looks, but in the fact that every time he goes on a TV show, it gets canceled. Kills me because I love Donald Logue and I loved the show and I loved Terriers. And, you know, there's so many good things he's been on, which is why I'm shocked that Gotham didn't get canceled, because he's on Gotham. But, well, it's one of the many reasons why I'm shocked Gotham didn't get canceled. But, I really loved the show, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. I just wish it had gotten a season three. I really do.
Well, there was definitely more they could have added to it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're going to end the show, at least it had an ending to it with, you know, the two main characters, because, you know, Sarah Cherie's character, she doesn't like him, and she's pissed off that she got saddled with this guy. But then she starts to realize that, you know, especially as one of the main plots is that her dad, a former police officer, might have been one of the ones that set him up and sent him to prison. That he is a good person, a good detective. And, you know, they had very good chemistry together and stuff. And it's one of those shows, again, that you don't realize Damian Lewis is actually British, just like people didn't realize it with Band of Brothers. So,
Stephen King's Dreamcatcher.
Exactly.
Also, it had the bonus of having Christina Hendricks in it.
Yes, it did. Another one. So, Brendan and I can basically talk forever about stuff. So, we've actually only got about 5 minutes left. So, I'm going to bring up two quick things that I think people should stream and check out. The first recommendation is a show called Halt and Catch Fire about the early PC industry, actually set in Dallas back in the early 80s. And it's loosely based on Compaq re-engineering a IBM computer and starting their PC revolution back in the 80s, even though it's a fictional company in Texas called Cardiff Electric. Definitely check out the 10 episodes. It's very nerdy. If you're a computer person, you will definitely get the references. Season 2 is about to hit AMC. Is about to hit AMC here in the next couple of weeks, which is where the show is on. But very good acting. You'll recognize people from nerd movies and stuff. So definitely check that out. But the one that I wanted to bring up, just because I was flipping through classics, and it's actually one of our favorites, and this is probably more for the older generation, but when it comes to good classic war movies, In Harm's Way with John Wayne and Kirk Douglas is actually on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So,
one more before we go. Also an AMC show, also second season just starting, but the first season's on Netflix, Turn, about what George Washington's cult perspiring.
Absolutely. Another good one. I wanted to bring up In Harm's Way as not only as a great, fantastic Navy movie, and my grandfather and my dad were always filled with a little bit of lots of tidbits about that film because it was actually filmed on the Great Lakes and around the Great Lakes Naval Station. But as it's one of those testaments to professional actors. Kirk Douglas and John Wayne didn't really like each other in person because they were very different. You know, John Wayne being a conservative and, you know, Kirk Douglas being very liberal and just disagreed. But they had such great respect for each other as actors. And they had such great chemistry with one another on screen that they worked with each other multiple times in film. And you talk about all the great, I mean, just a fantastic cast. I think it's also
the ensemble in that.
Right. And I think it's a testament to... Go ahead.
I was going to say that... Patricia Neal and... Sorry, we're just talking all each other. We're screwing this up. Go ahead. I'm going to shut up.
Well, Patricia Neal, Carol O'Connor, Burgess Meredith, you know, are in it, just to name a few. But I think it's also a testament to the old Navy, you know, guys that were captains at the time of World War II who, you know, had gone to the academy back, you know, around the First World War when we first really had a modern Navy in the U.S. to dealing with, you know, the guys that got in the middle of the war that didn't really know anything, like the Hollywood actors and film producers and all that, and really just wanted to serve, be in uniform, but not having to really do anything. So you have this clash of these people. And that was very common during World War II. So you kind of get that with John Wayne's character and all that as they're trying to develop a strategy of, you know, island hopping and all that. But just between the relationships and everything between characters and everything, and actually very much ahead of its time, because it was filmed in 1965, of great, great naval scenes. While the film was about 3 hours long, absolutely worth it, and a lot of great technical things done right, and very true to how, you know, the Navy, you know, was back then and stuff like that. So that's for a classic pick that we get to pick to end this show. I'm going to throw out In Harm's Way. And I don't think you're going to disagree with me, are you?
No, not at all. I love that movie. I'm a Navy guy. You know me.
Well, I'm not a Navy guy, and I love that movie. Anyway, we got less than a minute left on this show. We'll be back next week talking about the season finales and this year in television. And our thoughts of shows and stuff like that. But we want to tell everybody out there, stay nerdy. Keep track of our website with all the content and reviews and things that are going on. We've got kind of a busy summer because there's a lot of great movies coming out. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll actually begin to do a Mad Max show since there's a new Mad Max movie coming out. And I think most people are... So, anyway, we're going to get out of here. Surf Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon and find some hidden gems out there. And let us know about them because we're always up for great suggestions. And that's all she wrote. We are out of here, everybody.
Later, nerds.